everyone. Welcome to The Future is Golden. I'm Ruthie Kim, and this is a podcast where we explore what it looks like to step fully into your purpose, potential, and influence. Today, I have a very special guest, my friend, Jessica Scoopian. Jessica is a leadership coach. She facilitates workshops for various organizations in lots of industries. And one of her favorite tools is the Enneagram. And that is what we are here to talk about today. Jess, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. I'm so excited about this conversation. As you know, we've connected before this call. When I started this podcast, I really wanted to dive into this topic of courage and really wanted to like kind of peel back the curtain on, you know, this idea that some of us think courage is owned maybe by a certain personality, people that, you know, behave in certain ways. Well, they're the courageous ones. And what I love about the conversation that we're going to have today is we are going to unpack what courage could look like maybe for all the different types of the Enneagram. Now, for people listening, the Enneagram may be new to them. Would you mind introducing us to this coaching tool?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the highest level, the actual word Enneagram is a combination of two Greek words. So the word Ennea is a Greek word for nine, and the word gram is a Greek word for something written or drawn. So Enneagram actually refers to I'm going to use this little thing, this nine-pointed symbol that the framework is associated with. And the Enneagram is often referred to as a personality typing system, which is partially true because it does describe the behaviors and characteristics and general ways of being in the world of each of the types. But the Enneagram goes so much deeper than personality to describing nine fundamentally different archetypes of humans and their core beliefs and motivations and fears and desires, etc. So wow. It would be more accurate to say that your Enneagram type describes not just your personality, but your ego structure.
Okay. Now, when we thank you for unpacking that, by the way, when we connected before this, you used the word ego and I was like, okay, we're going to have to unpack that because I'm like ego. When I think of the word ego, I think of someone who's really full of themselves, like they've got a big ego, but then that's not what that means as it like aligns with the Enneagram, right? So what is ego? What is that about?
Yeah. So your ego structure is the psychological framework through which you view and interpret everything around you, which then influences how you feel about everything around you and how you behave, right? What you prioritize, deprioritize, how you carry yourself, and includes things like your worldview, which is what you believe about the way the world works and how you have to be in the world as a result. It includes your primary defense mechanisms and coping strategies and all of those things. So when I refer to ego in an Enneagram context, not referring to someone who's prideful or egotistical, but rather what they believe to be true about themselves and how they have to exist in the world as a result.
Awesome. Awesome. So when we started chatting about this idea of like, how could we explore courage? You had this beautiful idea of exploring courage through the lens of what each ego avoids. Am I getting that right? Is that what you said? Yes. I'm a newbie over here.
So our brains are wired to move away from threat and towards safety, right? Just generally speaking, as humans, to keep ourselves alive. So it makes sense that our ego, which is not bad or wrong, by the way, its primary purpose is to protect us and create and maintain a sense of identity that it believes will help us get what we want. The problem is when our ego is in charge, it actually leads to us losing access to our true self and behaving in ways that often prevent us from getting what we really want. In everyone's ego, in everyone's ego structure, there are things, experiences, and outcomes that the type tells them to move towards and seek, and other things that the type tells them to move away from and avoid. Okay. Again, as a means of maintaining safety and avoiding threat. But one other thing I want to say about that is, incidentally, the primary thing that is threatened by what we avoid is our ego. And it's only once we transcend our ego that we can rediscover who we really are and begin to make choices aligned with our true self. So in essence, choosing to courageously engage with what we have historically avoided is a necessary path to growth.
Okay. So when we talked about this, I mean, I'm an Enneagram 8, which I can't wait till we get to unpack that one today. But, you know, I resonate with this idea. There are things that I lean towards. There are things that I lean away from and will, you know, things I avoid. What I'm hearing you say, Jess, is the very things that we avoid are actually the things that we need in our life to grow. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, let's dive in, because I imagine we've got some listeners who are like, do mine, like, do my type, tell me what I avoid. And so let's go walk through them. And as we do that, maybe we can like share a nugget, a takeaway, a baby step for those who are listening that are like, that's my Enneagram type. I definitely avoid that, but I want to grow. How could they grow? So yeah. Let's dive in, Jess.
Okay, so we'll go sequentially from 1 to 9. That doesn't mean 1 is better and 9 is worse. In numerical order. So we're just starting with 1 for clarity purposes. So type 1 is known as the reformer or the improver or the perfectionist. Labels are not necessarily helpful, but for your audience who's not particularly well-versed in the Enneagram, I thought it could just be helpful to, you know, to center us in a particular place.
Yeah.
So type 1s seek perfection and they avoid mistakes, either their own mistakes or other people's mistakes. So when we think about the idea of courage, we could be reductionist here and say that courage would just mean being willing to make mistakes. Now, while that's true, I don't know that any type one would find that particularly helpful, or any of the other types for that matter, if we simply suggest that they just do the thing that they've been avoiding. So a more nuanced perspective would be to understand, in the context of a type one, perfection and mistakes are relative to their own rule book, right? Every type one has a rule book that says, this is what's good, this is what's bad, this is preferable, unpreferable, right, wrong, you know, what I should do, what I shouldn't do. And so they're constantly asking themselves, am I behaving in a way that I have determined is good and right and acceptable? And if I deviate from what is good and right and acceptable, if I deviate from what I should do or say or think, then that's a mistake. And there's not a universal set of rules that all ones abide by. It's specific to each person and what's in their rule book. So an idea of what courage could look like related to making mistakes may be considering engaging in an activity that doesn't actually have rules, right? Something that doesn't have a right or wrong and you actually can't make a mistake, like improv, for example.
Wow.
Charades or playing Pictionary, right? Even just play in general, because play is about being in the moment without judgment and making choices based on what's enjoyable, not whether it's right or wrong or perfect or imperfect. Now, my family might disagree about that related to board games, but generally speaking, play is about enjoyment, not a right or wrong.
I love that reframe around right or wrong. There's so many spaces in our life, Enneagram 1 or everyone, you know, where we get into these binary ways of thinking and they tend to always lock us down. So I love that kind of shout out to the ones. So ones, if you're listening, what I'm hearing, Jess, you're saying is go play. go play a game that's not right or wrong, but gives you the option to enjoy and to really kind of remove that sense of this could be a mistake. That's beautiful.
When one other thing that I would say, if the idea of play feels silly to any of the ones listening, right, or a waste of time, courage related to mistakes could also look like behaving differently related to something that you think is a rule, but is actually a preference, right? Like the way that toilet paper goes on the roll, right? Is it over or is it under? Right. If you're someone who thinks it's supposed to be hanging over, that's the right way to do it, then intentionally maybe flip it the other way for a couple of days just to show yourself that the world did not end when something was done incorrectly.
Wow. Well, I have thoughts about that, but I'm not a wand, so I'm not going to wade into the toilet paper debate. I love that example. Let's talk about twos. I've got a lot of great twos in my life who I absolutely adore.
Yeah, so twos are referred to as the helper or the giver or the befriender, and they seek appreciation, right? Appreciation for all the things that they've done, appreciation for all the things they've given, the fact that they've given more than they've taken, appreciation for how thoughtful they are, and they avoid feeling unworthy, right? Unworthy of love or support, unworthy of having needs, or simply existing in general without being helpful. So the most straightforward form of courage for a two would be to acknowledge their own needs and ask for help, right, related to those needs. But the fear, one of the fears of a type two is, what would happen if I asked for help and they said no, right? What would happen if they said yes, but they wanted to say no, and then they perceive me as a burden and they don't like me, and then conclude that I'm actually not lovable or worthy of love? So, better to not risk it and just do things myself, or better yet, not have any needs at all. So, step one in courage for a two might be to simply acknowledge to themselves that they do, in fact, have needs, and that's okay. One of the activities I had to do recently in a personal development program that I'm a part of is to make a list of all of my wants and needs. And to be clear that those are not the same thing, right? A want is not the same as a need. So something a two could do is to consider just making that list for themselves. Here are just three things, like three things that I want and three things that I need, and just be radically honest with themselves about that.
Wow. I feel like that reminds me, Jess, of a number of clients that I've spoken with and just the courage it often takes to name those wants and needs, to actually say them out loud, to
Yeah.
make space for that, to hold space for that. So I love that kind of call into that, into the courage, which maybe for some other of the Enneagram types might occur to as like, seriously, like that's hard. But for the two, there's a real invitation there to be courageous and to name what they want, what they need. It's
Yeah.
beautiful.
Take that a step further and be radically honest with God about what you want to need too without hedging, right? This is just what's true, and I'm just owning it. That takes courage.
Love that. Okay, let's go for our threes because you know our threes are listening and they have got pen and paper and they are ready to, get the assignment, kill the assignment. So tell us about threes.
So threes are known as the achiever or performer, and they seek success. And now success is based on whatever their context determines as successful. And then they avoid failure. So straightforward courage for a three would be to do something that they're not guaranteed to succeed in, right? Something in which they have no idea what they're doing. Most threes, if you ask them to tell you about something they've failed in, can't actually come up with something because they simply avoid doing anything that they may have the possibility of failing at. So they've never actually truly catastrophically failed at something. So a more courageous step would be to do something you don't know how to do in the presence of someone else. Because in the mind of a three, what's worse than failing in general is failing in front of other people. It's
Oh,
completely different.
wow. And I hearing that, Jess, like that's putting some more weight on the bar, right? Like just saying like, oh, I'll just do something that I probably will fail at, but then to do it in front of other people, that would be scary.
Well, and part of that is being willing to show people the messy middle, right? Before you've learned something, and at the point where you're not doing it well, or you're actually just pretty mediocre. And I could just share a little example of this as a type three myself. So I recently started trying to teach myself how to do a handstand. Maybe you've seen it in my reels or in my stories. And if I'm being honest, I did briefly consider the idea of just filming myself for 6 months and then posting one video that showed this incredible transformation from not knowing how to do a handstand to being a master at handstands. But instead of doing that as a means of countering my ego, I've been posting my progress along the way. And generally those videos are just me falling over and not being very strong. And that's been very freeing.
And I imagine also freeing for people watching, right? So I think, you know, we talk about this in different ways on the podcast, but this idea that courage is contagious. And so when we step into that place of whatever courage looks like for us, we know it's different for everyone, that other people watching, you know, maybe there's other moms at home inspired by your handstand, like, okay, like she's doing it and she doesn't have to be perfect. She's a beginner. That can cause some courage to rise up in other people to give it a shot.
I have received so many messages from random people that I haven't even spoken to in years saying, that's really encouraging and inspiring that you're even trying to do this and you're showing your process. Literally, many messages in that related to that exact idea.
Wow. So three is show your work, show the messy middle. That's the invitation for courage. All right, fours.
So fours are known as the individualist, the romantic, or the idealist, and they seek deep feelings and connections both within themselves and with other people, and they avoid rejection and not feeling good enough. So avoiding rejection and not feeling good enough can show up in two opposite ways for fours. Sometimes it looks like choosing not to share authentically for fear that your authentic self may be rejected. Other times it looks like oversharing and insisting on the conversation going deeper than is perhaps contextually appropriate at the moment as a means of proving to yourself and others that you are in fact good enough or interesting enough. So in certain situations, courage may look like being willing to be your most authentic self, even when it feels risky, sharing an insightful observation, even when the people you're with aren't that deep, or sharing an anecdote about yourself and believing that you're worthy of taking up that space. In other situations, courage may look like grounding yourself in your own knowledge that you are already whole, you are already complete and good enough, and you don't need to insist on your deepest feelings being heard and validated in order to know that's true.
Mm-hmm. Jess, I imagine there are some people sitting at home who are fours thinking, that's great. How do I know which situation I'm in? Could you share some thoughts on like how they would figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question because I think it really depends on the person. And this is where it's helpful to move perhaps out of your heart or head space and into your body, right? So fours are in the heart triad. They're very connected to their heart. They're also very in their heads. And so your body knows what you're doing. Your body knows when you're holding yourself back from fear or when you're moving forward from fear. So I would just recommend like tuning in to what are you sensing in your body right now? And then make a decision from that place.
Oh, that's powerful. I like that idea that our body knows. How's the fear showing up? Are we withholding? Are we holding back? Are we pressing in? Like just that check-in of like, what do I know? What is my body telling me in this moment? Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, fives.
Okay, so fives are known as the investigator or the observer, and fives seek knowledge and wisdom, and they avoid intrusion by others or loss of energy. Now, the sense of limited energy for fives is a really palpable thing, right? Your husband is a five.
I'm leaning in right now. I'm like, tell me everything I need to know about fives. Yes, Brian's a five.
So I don't think that it would be fair to say that courage just looks like saying yes to things that drain you, right? Because it's a very tangible feeling, but it could look like sharing more information about yourself with others and trusting that the other person isn't going to use that information to exploit you or to pull more information out of you or spread that information around to other people, right? It's a trust thing. It could look like saying yes to more things while giving yourself permission to leave early if it becomes too much versus just not going at all, right? And then the other thing that I would say is fives are in the fear triad, right? Five, six, and seven, head triad, their primary emotional experience is fear. And one of the things that that fives fear is that when push comes to shove, they will be faced with a situation in which they don't know what to do or they don't know the answer, which is why they're always seeking knowledge and wisdom as a hedge against that fear. Wow. So one of the most courageous things that a five can do is to take action without knowing everything that one could know and or being willing to share what they do know, even if they believe there's more room to learn.
Yeah, I love that, like, call to action and just that notice that, like, there's often, like, knowledge, info, like, as a source of, like, protection. Like, give me, like, let me learn, let me find out what I need so that I'm ready in the moment. And what I'm hearing you say, Jess, is maybe a baby step, a courageous baby step, to say, I'm going to take the action without doing, you know, I'm thinking of a number of people I've spoken to, the prep work, the overthinking, the stuff that, you know, many people do. But it sounds like especially fives on the front end of action. And what I'm hearing you say is actually take the action, like take the step, see what happens.
Yes. Just that you will be okay.
Okay. I will make sure to have Brian listen to this portion of the podcast. let's talk about sixes.
So sixes are known as the loyalist or the skeptic or the loyal skeptic, and they seek trust and guidance, and they do whatever they can to avoid negative scenarios from happening. So courage for sixes is particularly important because they have what would be referred to as double fear, right? So they're in the fear triad, five, six, and seven. And fear is also type six's vice, their primary vice. Every type has a primary vice and primary virtue. And for sixes, it's fear. So for a six, fear is an ever-present reality, though the way they experience and respond to fear depends on their subtype. Can't get into subtypes right now, but there are three different ways that all types show up. And for sixes, those subtypes tend to look very different. So some sixes are very aware of their fear, and they tend to be more avoidant of things that they find concerning or threatening. Other sixes are not as aware of their fear and actually actively engage in high risk or high adrenaline behaviors as a means of subconsciously pushing against the fear and then proving to themselves that they're not afraid. But interestingly, even though the primary vice is fear, the virtue isn't courage. The virtue is faith. So the most courageous thing that a six can do is to choose to have faith, right? Faith that they can trust themselves, faith that other people are trustworthy, faith that there's something greater than themselves that's looking out for their good, and that even if negative scenarios occur, that they're going to be okay. They will have what they need to be okay. So one small step towards courage and faith for a six may look like making a decision without consulting the full committee. And if you're a six, you know what the committee is. I don't have to explain that. Without second guessing themselves, right? Just make the decision, move forward, and let the experience associated with that decision become a data point, a tangible factual data point that you can then use to inform future decisions.
And I'm hearing in that too, Jess, like, you know, many, or if not most of the listeners here are Christians, people of faith. So I'm hearing, like, maybe for the sixes who are listening here, that there's an invitation here into deeper faith with God. Like, do you have any thoughts about how that could play out?
Well, and I would say faith doesn't, I mean, for people who aren't Christian, faith doesn't have to be related to faith in God. Faith is more meaning that I'm believing in something without direct proof. Right? Without direct evidence. Mm-hmm. I'm choosing to believe in future goodness. Yeah. I'm choosing to believe that I will be okay, even if I don't have evidence of that at this current moment.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then obviously, if you are a Christian or believe in God, then that faith is that I trust that God exists and God cares for me and God is before me and behind me and beside me and has worked it all out for my good.
Lovely. Sevens. You've got some sevens in our lives.
So sevens are known as the enthusiast or the optimist, and they seek stimulation and pleasure, whether that's experiential stimulation or just mental stimulation in their own mind. And they avoid pain, discomfort, and limitation. So courage for sevens at the most simple level could look like just being willing to exist in silence with no external stimulation, right? So you're doing the dishes, you're going for a run, you're in the car. Instead of listening to music or playing a podcast or an audiobook or calling a friend, just be willing to sit in the silence. Now, sevens are also in the fear triad. And the fear is that if I'm not stimulated, then negative feelings or discomforting thoughts may arise and I'll be flooded and consumed by them. So if I just stay busy, if I stay stimulated, then I'll never have to take that risk. But since human beings are emotional creatures and pain is an inevitable part of life, what ends up happening is that a lot of negative emotions get repressed and then they leak out in unproductive ways. Mm. So Richard Rohr says, you know, their emotions follow just a very clear path. They arise, they demand to be dealt with, and then they subside. But when we refuse to deal with them, they get stuck. But the interesting thing is that according to brain science, it actually only takes 90 seconds to process and release an emotion if you label it when you feel it.
Wow. 90 seconds. That's 90 crazy seconds. Fast.
So if I am feeling angry and I acknowledge that to myself, I'm feeling angry, then within 90 seconds, activity in the part of my brain that's associated with emotion, right, the amygdala, starts decreasing. And activity in the brain that's associated with logic and rational processing, which is your prefrontal cortex, starts increasing. So courage for a seven could just look like giving themselves permission to feel and label an emotion in the moment and trust that their brain will respond accordingly by allowing the emotion to subside after.
Yeah. And what I hear in there, Jess, is crucial is the naming of the emotion. Like that's the specific piece, right? And for many people, that especially if you're not familiar with making space for those emotions, that can be quite a journey getting to that place of just like, whew, what is this that I'm feeling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You start off with mad, glad, sad, and afraid, right? Mm-hmm. Keep it at the most basic level. And then over time, increase your emotional fluency.
I also love what you said about silence. I've never heard that before as it relates to sevens, this idea of like eliminating the external stimuli, and that in itself could be courage for a seven, is just to reduce the amount of activity or engagement or stimulus that you have going on and just to kind of sit in the silence as well. That maybe that could be a next step for some sevens who are wanting to experiment a little bit with this.
Absolutely. Very small baby step. It's like just one day. Washing dishes, like don't put any other sound on. Driving in your car to work, just let it be for that one ride.
Yeah. Well, now we have arrived at the number that I've been waiting for.
It's a lot of pressure to deliver for you right now.
That's right. I'm ready for you to tell me what is going on with me here, Jess. The Enneagram 8.
So type 8s are known as the challenger or the protector. And they seek control and justice. Now, the need to control for eights is related to the desire to not be controlled or the fear of losing control in general. It's not that they're like, I have to be in control, but they will assert their control as a hedge against that fear. So then they avoid feeling vulnerable or weak. So courage, you know, at this most straightforward level, could look like being willing to stay in a vulnerable moment without shutting down that moment or short-circuiting that moment with humor, sarcasm, moving right on to the next thought.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You know, let's go a little deeper. So courage could also look like releasing control and trusting that other people are in fact capable and competent. And even if they mess something up, it can be fixed. And maybe that was an important learning opportunity for them. But going a step further than that, one of the primary fears for a type 8 is that there isn't actually anyone who is strong enough or big enough, literally or figuratively, to hold space for the totality of who they are.
Wow.
So courage may look like choosing to believe that you are not too much. that there are people and places and contexts that have the requisite capacity for you to show up in the fullness of who you are.
Wow, that just, you know, hit the nail on the head, I think, right there. I mean, it's I think often as eights, we hear this invitation to be more vulnerable. But I love how you just took us deeper there. Like we're you know, afraid. Say that again, because you said you were afraid that there's no one that can hold our totality. Is that what you said?
Yeah, there's no one big enough or strong enough to hold space for the totality of who you are. And so you have to be less. You have to be the strong one, right? I have a client who, like, so if the idea of trusting someone else feels like too big of a step for eights who are listening, I have a client who, she's an eight, and she was sharing how when she is in the ocean, that's one of the only places that she feels like she can fully let go, because the ocean is so, so vast that she trusts its capacity to hold her literally and figuratively. Yeah. So finding yourself in a body of water and just allowing yourself to float could be an interesting step towards this idea that I'm not too much, I'm not too big. There are places and spaces that can hold me.
It's funny that you use that example, you know, because a few years ago, my husband and I, we moved down near the ocean here in San Francisco, and I have had that reflection as I've thought about my relationship with God, looking at the ocean. Like, why do I love the ocean so much? Like, and it reminds me of the vastness, and I've made that connection of like, this represents to me anyway, the vastness of how big God is. Because I resonate with that idea of like, can anyone hold all this? You know, is this too much for somebody? And, you know, everyone's got their own journey with trying to figure that out. But ultimately, where I've come as a place of rest is I know that God can hold me. Like, I know that he is large enough and strong enough for all that's happening. So I love that ocean, because I resonate with that. I go to the ocean often and reflect on, okay, God, you're bigger. And now you've connected the dots for me to why that matters so much to me.
Yeah.
That's good. All right. Last one, last but not least.
Certainly not least. Type 9, the peacemaker/mediator. So 9s seek harmony and comfort, and they avoid direct conflict and ill will. So courage for a 9 certainly looks like being willing to engage in conflict, whether minor or significant, but it can be helpful to understand for 9s that a primary fear is that there isn't actually enough space for their voice and preferences to be heard, right? That's sort of similar to an 8, but in a different way. There's not enough space for my preference, for my voice. And so they withhold their voice and preferences in service of maintaining harmony and avoiding the conflict or ill will that may occur as a result of someone disagreeing with their perspective or preference. So engaging in conflict doesn't necessarily mean you're in a fight with someone. It may simply mean that you're willing to share your preference before asking the other person what their preference is, even if you suspect that their preference may be different than yours. Now, that said, I coach a lot of 9s, and for a lot of them, they have pushed their preferences so far down that they've lost access to them. And so step 1 may actually be just as a means of regaining access to preferences, like create a note in your phone and start jotting down the things that you prefer throughout the day, right? For example, if I find myself drinking coffee in the morning, I could ask myself, what is it about coffee that I enjoy? Why not tea? Do I prefer my coffee black or with sugar? Do I eat breakfast? If so, do I prefer eggs or toast or cereal? Why is that? What is it about that that I enjoy? And just notice what you notice at first, right? And then start vocalizing those preferences in low stakes scenarios to, again, gather data points that demonstrate there is, in fact, space for my preferences. My relationships were not harmed because I had a preference.
It sounds like there's quite a similarity between the 2 and the 9 in regards to naming what they want.
Yes, and there is similarity, but there is a nuance there. So 2s don't feel worthy of having needs, right? Like the world does not inherently value me for who I am. So I have to be giving more than I'm ever receiving or taking. And in order for me to give more, I have to remove what I need, right? So it's a worth thing. For a nine, it's more of the idea that there's just not space. It's my job to create space for other people, right? For their voice to be heard and respected. But I fear that there's just simply not enough space for me. Wow. So it's similar, but it's nuanced.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Jess, thank you. You've run us through in like record speed time, all nine times. And hopefully as people are listening, they've been able to be like, hey, that's my Enneagram type. That resonates. That's a baby step. So if you're listening to this conversation, I encourage you to take some of the baby steps that Jess has been sharing with us today. Just as we move towards wrapping up here, last words of courage, encouragement. What would you like to say to people that are listening to our conversation today?
So there are two primary things that I'm learning about courage in my own personal development journey that may be helpful for someone. One is that courage, at the most meta level, regardless of your Enneagram type, looks like being willing to release control and release attachment to outcomes. And trust that there's something greater than yourself that will hold you and has perhaps greater insight into what's best for you than you can see. The other idea is that for every time I'm feeling afraid, right, or I'm lacking courage, I ask myself, what could only become possible if the thing I fear most happens? Because sometimes the greatest gifts exist on the other side of what we fear most. So that's something that I've been asking myself as a means of catalyzing courage in myself.
Love that. Love the idea of catalyzing courage in ourselves. Thank you so much, Jess. Jess, how do people find you? If they want to connect with you, where do they go? What does that look like?
Yeah, you can find me on my website, jessicascoupian.com. Pretty straightforward. You can also find me on Instagram, though you're not going to find much there at this current moment in time. But courage for me looks like stepping into a new season where I start showing up more on social media. So my handle, my Instagram is at JessicaScoupian_coach. I'm going to be there soon.
Yeah. Awesome. And I imagine people might want to find you on Instagram to check out those handstands.
That's on my personal Instagram. Maybe it'll come over to the business one soon.
Awesome. Yes. Well, I would love to see you on that Instagram more, talking about what you're doing and what, you know, like you're bringing to the world, Jess, because that is how I experience you. Like as a person, as a coach, you bring light and you've brought that on the podcast today. Thank you so much. Go follow Jess on Instagram. Find her website, check out the amazing work that she's doing. Jess, thank you so much for being with us today. And thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for having me.